to Real Living. This is Lavinia Spirito with Mary Lou Nemecek. And we are inaugurating our 2018 radio season with a reflection that you all out there probably get anyway. It's Bishop Robert Barron's daily gospel reflections. And if you don't get them, we certainly would recommend them. It's a wordonfire.org. Very good. And it's a reflection, of course, as you know, we have been through Advent. We have been through the 12 days of Christmas, and we are now into the first few weeks of Ordinary Time. The reading for an Ordinary Time doesn't mean that it's ordinary. It just means that it's the extended period of time that happens between Lent and Advent and a few other things like that that have specific focuses. But the focus of Ordinary Time is just living your life. You know, living your life for the kingdom, putting into practice all the things that we've learned. It's no coincidence, I think, that the liturgical color for Ordinary Time is green, because it's, you know, growth. That's what I would represent it as, you know, as I would interpret it as growth. The green of Ordinary Time represents when we actually put into practice everything that we're learning, everything that the Lord reveals to us in prayer, when we grow in holiness, where we grow in mission. God knows the Christian life is not static. That's for sure. What do you think, Mary Lou?
I totally agree. And it's kind of starting with a clean slate. You know, we're in 2018. So what are we going to do differently this year than perhaps last year in terms of our walk in faith, basically?
You know, we have done shows. You know, I was trying to figure out how long we've been doing this show, Mary Lou.
And a long time.
did we start in 2004, 2003?
I mean, yeah, somewhere in there, I think. Yeah.
It's been a long, long time. And we've done our fair share of New Year resolution shows. But somewhere I was reading that New Year's resolutions really are not worth the paper that they're printed on or the bandwidth that they take up online, because it's a list of things that we propose that we are going to do, which very often won't happen. So the thing to do is probably just to concentrate on a couple of important themes and just let the Lord course correct as the months go by. Doesn't that sound better?
Well, it does. But I do think it's a reminder that he keeps giving us chances. He keeps allowing us to, as you said, change course, redirect yourselves. I mean, we can't fail if we put it in his hands and listen to him. So I guess we're always kind of renegotiating our path and in terms of direction, and we can't give up. We can't despair. So at least that's going to be my approach this year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in every year, sometimes we have a great year. Sometimes we have a not so great year. Sometimes we say, thank God that year is over, you know. But I think what that does, it doesn't acknowledge that the Lord knows exactly what we need and that he allows us to go through stuff, even stuff that's unpleasant. And because what in the end is the goal, right? What's the goal of our life?
Well, the goal of our lives is to be with him forever in heaven and not to miss the mark, as you would say.
Yeah, it's to grow in holiness and to grow in our relationships with him. So sometimes the Lord knows that we need the year from, quote, hell, excuse me. But, you know, sometimes, you know, it's the harder times. It's a time of suffering that allow us to put into practice the lessons and the trust that we need to have in God, you know, because sometimes, like, if we can do stuff in the natural with our own strength and we kind of have it covered, then we don't really, you know, in a certain way, maybe when we're more of relying on our natural strength, then, you know, there's a lot less room for the Lord to act, don't you think?
Well, we can never, yes, and we can never see the benefit of suffering until we look back on it kind of from a distance and reflect that, oh my gosh, what happened was good for me. Mm-hmm. What happened, you know, wasn't the end. It was a new beginning. I did get through it. You know, as I say, never to despair, to keep moving on, moving on, moving on. in a world that's totally troubled and frustrating in many ways, in terms of their approach to to even acknowledging that there is a God and there are absolute truths. And it's
right. Yeah. No,
it's
I
a challenge each and every day.
It is a challenge. But you know what? What in the world ever told us that life was going to be easy? That's what I always ask. You know, it's like, yeah, so this is hard. So this is difficult. So this is almost impossible. But we're, you know, none of us were born with like a little warranty attached to our little toes saying, hey, it's going to be all, you know, downhill from here.
You know, I read an article about Facebook or saw something, and it was saying that, you know, in many ways, when you look at all these people on Facebook and they're doing all these wonderful, marvelous things and living these great lives and doing all these, you know, visiting all these places, and it just looks like life is perfect. Guess what? That's really not what the reality is. That's only what you want to show the best or, you know, what you just want to put out a picture that's really probably not totally accurate. And it has caused other people to become kind of depressed by looking at all these things that these people are doing. What's the solution to that? In my eyes, it's turning off the Facebook, turning off those things that are really not realistic, and taking an approach that's a better approach to redirect again. And, you know, where should we redirect our entertainment, our reading, our just what we do in life, instead of all the stuff out there through Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you know, all this stuff that just permeates us. And we seem to be so connected to it that we can't really, we abandon what our approach should be. Let me put it that way. We're watching what others are doing instead of deciding what we should do for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I would also caution against an all or nothing approach, because, you know, it's when we tell ourselves that we can't do something that we want to do it the most, you know, and then we create kinds of scenarios of guilt and that kind of stuff. So I think probably the harder thing to do would be to stay on, you know, your various forms of social media and outreach, but thinking about them in an evangelistic way, so that, you know, I very seldom post on my personal page. I post a lot on the Catholic Way Bible Study Facebook page, but the kinds of things that I'm posting, if you have been following it, have been just, you know, basic information about the faith, inspirational stuff, you know, things that's really hopefully will be helpful. So, because, you know, my firm conviction is that St. Paul would have been on Facebook, you know, and St. Paul would have had a Twitter account, and St. Paul would have been on Instagram. I mean, you know, there's a true apostolic dimension, I think, to social media, but it also demands for us to have, you know, self-control and not fall in, head, you know, it down into the hole every time we open our social media account. What do you think?
Well, I agree with that, because it's not about the personal. It's about something bigger and better than us when we look at the posts on the Catholic Way Bible Study. I totally agree with that.
And I'm having a lot of fun. I really want to flag that to you all, to the listeners, is the Catholic Way Bible Study Facebook page, because I'm having a lot of fun reposting some very inspiring articles and sharings and photos. And I'm updating you all on when Catholic Way Bible Study comes back for the 2018 session in Lexington, at least. Obviously, we're in 40 states, so we can't keep everybody straight. And we can't tell everybody when everybody else is starting back, but it's always a good thing to kind of create this global community. And it's been pretty cool, because I've had people reach out and like and comment from all over the world, really. So it's been, you know, it's been pretty cool.
Well, that certainly is a positive aspect to it.
In the end, ad majorem Dei gloriam, it should be all be for the greater glory of God, right? You know, that's the final, I think, the final point. And what's interesting is that because I post on Catholic Way Bible Study, but I post as myself, then, of course, my personal Facebook feed always carries what I've posted. right? As right. posted by somebody else. But if you just even glance at it, you can see that I posted it. So it's been actually kind of cool. I've been able to reconnect with cousins and friends in Italy who love what I'm posting. You know, people I haven't seen in 40, 50 years, 30 years, 20 years, 10 years, whatever. So anyway, I mean, there's a big plug right there.
I always hit that translation button when I see posts from a friend in Italy, because it's always in Italian. Uh-huh. So I see what they're all saying. So
Yeah. But yeah, so there's some real positive aspects. Another positive aspect of social media also is that we get exposed to wonderful posts such as Word on Fire's Bishop Robert Barham, auxiliary bishop in Los Angeles right now under Archbishop Gomez. And we know, and I'm sure everybody who is listening to us has heard of Bishop Barham and his incredible talk about a guy who really knows how to use media.
Media, right.
Social media and just use it. You know, this pretty amazing. On Facebook, again, I saw where some people were reposting some of the responses, because when he does a blog, he actually responds to the people who are commenting on the blog. And his responses, even in the face of quite nasty, uncharitable, to say the least, snarky, offensive, insulting, malicious, one would almost say sometimes, comments is really funny. Because he's always articulate, always witty, but always charitable. So maybe that's an example for all of us. His gospel commentary this week, first week in Ordinary Time, you might be listening to this show afterwards, but it's still worth going to Mark chapter 1, verses 21 through 28. And it is Jesus encountering a man with an unclean spirit in the synagogue at Capernaum. Now, remember, you and I have been to Capernaum actually last year.
Yes.
Right around these times, we were in Israel, and Capernaum, we stood right on the grounds of the first synagogue in Capernaum. The grounds that we stood on was a 4th century synagogue built over the 1st century. But I mean, the location exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the Sea of Galilee from the synagogue. Isn't that funny? Mm-hmm. Just
it's an extraordinary place.
It is an extraordinary place. But what was the place of the synagogue in those times? Well, the place of the synagogue in those times was a place of holiness. It was a place of religion. It was a place of faith. It was a sacred place. It wasn't the temple, obviously, but it was a place where the elders would gather and discuss scripture, where scripture was written, was read, and where worship was offered. So it was a sacred place. It would correspond, I think the temple really would correspond more to our church, the idea of church that we have, because we offer sacrifice, the unbloodied sacrifice of the Mass. But the synagogue had the Torah part, had the reading part, had the Word of God portion of what we experience today in the liturgy. So if you conflate the synagogue and the temple, you have the idea, the modern idea of the Catholic Church, you know, the idea where it is the space where we break open the Word of God, but we also offer the sacrifice of the Eucharist. So my point is, it's a holy place. It's a place of worship. And yet the man arrives and he's in the synagogue. He's not outside, he's inside. And very interestingly, and Mark is always very to the point and clear and terse and not a lot of words, and he encounters Jesus and he speaks, but it's not him who is speaking, right? It's
right.
The demons that are within him that speak in the plural form, which always gives me chills, because it's obviously that, you know, the poor guy is in there, but the level of infestation is such that the spirits are able to take over and speak through him, etc., which kind of sounds like a horror movie, but it's present in the scriptures. So if it's present in the scriptures, we know that it's true. We know that it is a possibility.
Exactly.
Right. And he speaks right. And he says, what do you have to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I like how they're offering the possibility. Right.
No. I think they know that they're the losers ultimately. But
and they lead with that,
mm-hmm.
You know, and they do the same thing in Mark 4 when Jesus encounters the man possessed, the Gadarene demoniac. And they say, you know, what have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? You know, mm-hmm. like, don't, you know, what the heck? What are you doing? This is our territory. This is our turf.
Well, they explicitly say, I know who you are. You mm-hmm. know, I know who you are, the Holy One of God. Mm-hmm. They recognized him immediately.
Mm-hmm. The Holy One of God.
Unlike us.
Which, you know, people say that they're spiritual, but not religious. Well, there's a clear example of demons are spiritual because they have no material aspects, but they're not religious in that they do not cleave to the truth. They do not cleave to the faith. They are only aware of a spiritual reality that's greater than they are, which is, of course, the Lord of the universe. Mm. I like the exegesis of the word devil or diabolic that Bishop Barron offers, because it kind of is connecting back to what we're doing in the morning study at Christ the King in Lexington this year, which is 1st and 2nd Corinthians. And we have quite a bit of an opportunity to explain a little bit about diabolical power. Now, what does it mean? I love it when they go into the exegesis of the word. I don't like talking about evil or about the evil one, but occasionally you just have to kind of acknowledge his role in affairs, in our lives, in current affairs, in the life. It is no coincidence that he has such influence, because he is, in the end, the prince of this world. The keys to the world were given to him at the fall, at the original sin, right? But so the word devil is derived from the Greek diabolos, which derives from the Greek verb diabalein, which means to divide, to scatter, to throw oneself across something else. You know, in Corinthians, you'll have Paul talking about diabolical powers that throw themselves across God's plan. So you have this impression of basically a noisy, misbehaved child having a tantrum, throwing themselves on the floor and stamping their feet, sort of thing. Mm. And so there's the scattering power of evil and sin. And he goes, of course, to the root. I don't think this is a Greek this is not a Greek or Latin root. I mean, it may be like an Anglo-Saxon root. Sunde, like the English word sin, does not derive from the Latin or the Greek. The Latin word is peccare, and the Latin languages, peccato, pesce, etc., have that root. But the English, of course, has the Anglo-Saxon root. So the Anglo-Saxon root is sunde, which is related to sundering. And what does sundering mean? To divide, right. To cut, right? So sin and the power of evil, so we sin obviously through the power of evil, what does it do to us ultimately? You know, a lot of us relate to sin in second grade terms, you know, or in sixth grade terms. It's like, well, what's the least that I can get away with?
Mm.
Right? Before it's a sin.
Right.
Instead, he says, sin separates us from one another because it sunders, it divides us interiorly, setting one part of the self against another. You know, and I can tell you that out of personal experience, when I sin, one part of me is warring with the rest of me that wants to serve God. And yet my one part that has sinned is in there trying to justify what I just did.
Exactly.
Right? Trying to make it all better, trying to say, well, no, I actually meant to do that because of this and that and the other. When instead, I think we would be better served to be less divided and to go back into perfect integration, which is health, psychological health, to be completely integrated and acknowledge the fact that we've messed up, that we sinned, that we did something wrong, go to confession and move on. How much effort is spent justifying ourselves?
You know, on the plus side of that is when you experience that your mind is divided, your will is split, as Bishop Barron is saying, the healthy part of that is that you recognize that. So that there is a conscience working there, reminding you that you have sinned. You know that. You know you're divided. You know that there's something that has to be healed, something that has to be corrected. And that to me is a blessing when you feel that way, because you know it's time to go to confession. It's time to become whole again. And after experiencing that sacrament, you come out feeling so relieved, you know. There's a physical aspect to it in terms of, you know, a healing aspect to it that you physically feel, like a burden's been off your shoulders. Like I can breathe easily now. Like,
well, let me give
okay.
Right. Let me give you an example, something that happened to me recently. I was away with my family and, you know, trying to get people to Mass on Christmas and Sunday. Also, 2 days in a row. Oh, my goodness. Uh-huh. So that was, of course, Christmas and Sunday. And then the next week, the scenario repeats. At least I thought it repeated because you had a Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then I thought that the first was a holy day of obligation, which usually it is. And lo and behold, you know, I just don't insist. I don't, you know, we basically, what happens, we miss Mass on the first of the year. And it absolutely tore me up. I literally could not rest until I went to confession. So the first thing I tell Father in confession is, well, I miss Mass. He says to me, pause. So you didn't know that it wasn't a holy day of obligation?
It wasn't. I knew that. But I made it to the 8:30 Mass. And now I was like you. I've just got to get there. It's January 1st. I don't want to miss Mass. And I too was in Florida, and this lovely young priest was saying all the Masses while I was down there. And at that particular Mass, which is the Solemnity of Our Blessed Mother, mm-hmm. He has a great devotion to her, and he's a musician and a composer. And he had his guitar at Mass. And at the homily, he sang a song to Mary that he composed. And wow. It was really quite touching.
Wow. So
that Mass ended up being a special treat.
So yeah, well, anyway.
You search out different Masses in different places.
Oh, absolutely. I love going to Mass in different places. But in any case, but my point is that when I thought, obviously I hadn't, right?
Right.
But the intent is what matters also, right? Right. I thought that I had, you know, missed the mark. And my emotions were militating against my deepest convictions, as it says here at Bishop Barron. My mind was divided. I just could not rest until I went to confession as soon as I got back to Lexington, you know? So there's, I think, a clear example of sin or even perceived sin that divides us. It sets one part of the self against another. And I'm sure the more we try to live for the Lord, the more our consciences are tender and the more easily wounded they are, which is a good thing.
That is
none of us
thing.
Wants to have a seared conscience, right? So what does he conclude? He says, the authority of the voice of Jesus brings the man back to himself. And this is precisely the effects that Jesus' voice has had up and down the ages. When you turn inside you, you get knitted back together. When Jesus becomes the clear center of your life, then your mind, your will, your emotions, your private life, your public life, all of it finds a harmonious place around that center. And, you know, what comes to mind is the famous diagram that in the first week of the Life in the Spirit seminars, at least they used to, draw a diagram on the board. I'm sure now they have fancy DVDs or whatever. But the idea was the wheel of your life, the spokes, and who's in the center, who's in the driving seat. Is he in the passenger seat, Jesus? Or is he in the trunk? Mm-hmm. Or did he even make it into the car? You know, so there's that clear example of Jesus being the center of our lives. And then once we are oriented towards the truth, towards the center, then everything makes sense. And everything that brings us out of order with that things immediately sets mind, will, emotions, private, public, we become fragmented. And that's, I think, you know, Jesus wants us to be healthy. He wants us to be healthy physically, psychologically, and spiritually. And that should be, I suppose, the final work on this, our 2 cents on the first week in ordinary time, Mark 1, verses 21 through 28. Thank you for joining us.